Hey, gang, couple of plugs before we get going. You know, leading you into this summer, you need some good-ass rock and roll music, and we got just the cure for you. Do you like our theme song? Steve, you like our theme song.
I love our theme song.
Chris Cabin, you like our theme song?
You didn't even have to ask me that.
Well, it was written by our friends in New York City, the band called Hurrah, A Bolt of Light.
I wish they had a new album out.
Well, guess what, Steve? They do.
Oh, man.
What?
That's right. Available now on their Bandcamp page and other places across the internet. The new self-titled record from Hurrah, A Bolt of Light is out, featuring, let's see how many tracks, a total of 9 shit-kicking rock and roll tracks for you to download. Let me tell you, this is good. We talked about this before. It's good getting ready for work music, mm-hmm. getting ready to go out drinking music,
yep.
getting ready to stay home drinking music.
And you know what? I like a good, like, a 9-track record. Yeah. It's like an old school, like Led Zeppelin, like all the records are like less than 10 every time. I like that. I'm really
that's what you want.
If you're at the gym and you don't want to commit to it too much, you put on some Hurrah, Bolt of Light, you're out of there in 20 minutes. Like, hey, I did a whole album.
I played the whole album. It's not my fault it's only 9 tracks. I did the work.
25 minutes of cardio, 30 minutes of cardio. Who knows the difference, really?
Everybody's watching Jeopardy, right? Everybody likes Jeopardy?
I don't think I ever get home when Jeopardy's on.
Well, there's a great... They do this great commercial where you come back from commercials and it's just Jeopardy saying, like, the answer is, what, you know, this makes your headache go away really well. What is Aleve?
Oh, man!
Yeah, it's great. So, what is Hurrah, Bolt of Light? Little plug.
And let me tell you this, for folks in New York City, or if you're visiting the area anytime in this great month of June, they have a residency at the Rockwood Music Hall every, let's see, Saturday night in June. So that's the 7th, the 14th, the 21st, and the 28th. Our good friends are playing a show at midnight at the Rockwood Music Hall. Go check them out. It's on the Lower East Side in New York City. Hurrah, A Bolt of Light, the new self-titled album, out now on Bandcamp and other places across the internet. And while we're slinging stuff for other people,
what is Aleve?
What is slinging some stuff for ourselves? Brand new commentary track, Trekmentary Nemesis, is out now. It's me, Steve, and Eric making fun of Star Trek Nemesis for 2 hours.
Yeah, it's great.
I just looked at you like, you got anything? Yeah, it's great. Point is, Steve's right. It is pretty great. We got a lot of great responses about it. You can pick it up in iTunes, the Google Play Store, Amazon, and CDBaby.com. If you buy it in any of those places, they're like, hey, man, you purchased this. Would you like to rate and review? Go ahead and rate and review. We would greatly appreciate it. Increases the profile of this comedy track.
You know who's burning up the American cinemas right now? Patrick Stewart.
Absolutely right. If you want 2 hours of us doing really bad Patrick Stewart impressions, Steve's got the best one, though. I will say it's pretty great.
Yes.
Trekmentary Nemesis is chock full of that. It's chock full of us defending Michael Dorn. It's chock full of us making fun of Brent Spiner quite a bit.
I'll say Siska Spiner.
Chris Cabin
pretty
did,
strong. Not you know.
He did the seesaw hand thing. In case you're wondering.
But if you ever wanted to watch a movie where Brent Spiner plays one fat robot and then a slow challenged other fat robot, this is the movie for you. Visit iTunes, the Google Play Store, Amazon, or CDBaby.com. Pick up Trekmentary Nemesis today.
What is Aleve?
Hello, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Chris Cabin.
Steven Sadak.
And we hate movies. Everyone, welcome to We Hate Movies. Thank you for tuning in. As always, if you're new to the program, you are tuning in what I feel to be the first week and the most exciting 2 months we do every year, the start of Summer Blockbuster Extravaganza 2014.
I love that you had to stretch the word exciting to cover something such as Mystery Men. You know, you're really like, hey, no, this is exciting. It's exciting. We're doing Mystery Men, everybody.
It's like if you're a door-to-door salesman and you know that, like, the Apple Corer that you're selling is real shit. And you got to be like, this thing cores so many apples. So good. That's what this is. I have to tell you, it's an exciting show. Even though we're talking about 1999's Mystery Men, directed by Kinka Usher. That's Kinka Usher.
Question mark, by the way.
Yeah. Do you want to get into that right now?
Yeah, I do.
Steve Sadak, ladies and gentlemen, folks at home, boys and girls, Steve Sadak is hiding some sort of mystery trivia from us, and I would like to know what it is about director Kinka Usher.
It seems as if in Tom Waits' biography, or one of his biographies, or autobiographies, I should say, it's called The Low Side of the Road. He says that he was in a movie in 1990. He has a little chapter about his acting resume. And, you know,
right.
He says, I was in a movie in 1999 called Mystery Men, directed by Tim Burton using a pseudonym.
Get out of town.
That makes sense.
The dude Kinka Usher exists. There's no two ways about it. Like,
right. He doesn't have a lot of credits on IMDb.
This is his one and only directing credit. Like, if there could be a world that this is a bad Tim Burton movie that he was ashamed of, that he just shoved off to his AD and was like, hey, dude, you directed this movie.
So then poor Kinka Usher has to take the fall?
Like, because this is a huge movie, kind of, as far as budget. There's $60 million behind it. There was a lot of star power. Like, how did this movie get off the ground
one thing doesn't make sense here. It doesn't look like the Burton Batmans.
No.
It looks like the Schumacher Batmans. If it's going to look like anything, it's got that fucking poppy bullshit color thing.
But maybe he's trying something. He tried something new. I mean, it's not impossible, but it's also not confirmed.
Now, this is the weird thing, though. So this movie comes out in 1999. I don't know the production history of Mystery Men, but also in 1999 is Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, I mean, there's that's going on.
I mean, it's also entirely possible Tom Waits doesn't take anything seriously. It's like, yeah, it was a Tim Burton movie that didn't happen. You know, I mean, it's not entirely impossible that he is just like trying to fuck with people, because Tom Waits likes to fuck with people.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. I would lend more on that side.
Just keep that in the back of your head, everybody. Maybe it's there, maybe it's not.
But it's so weird, though, because as soon as you said that, like, I started immediately thinking back to the 2 hours and 1 minute I wasted last night watching this movie. And I don't know. It kind of makes sense.
I guess it is. It does have that like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory look to it.
Yes, it does.
It's more, and like it could be, but also, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of Tim Burton movies I don't like.
Yeah,
I don't like any of them, even remotely in the realm, as much as I don't like this movie.
That's
fair. But you have to think though. Is that another thing that led him to sort of disavow the movie?
And it could be a thing where he left in the middle, and, you know, who knows
that
what
would, that maybe
he,
that
he leaves
would.
In the middle, somebody comes in right. to do a little bit of a patch job.
Because
fix it,
I just feel
slam
there's,
it together.
There's too many names in this movie, and there's too much money behind it
yeah.
for this nobody director to get credit for making this movie.
And it's not a movie you can just sell somebody. It's not like, hey, we're going to make a Batman movie. Got it. Done.
Yeah.
We're going to make
a
Spawn movie. Who cares? Make it. Print. Yeah. That's a license to print money, everybody. But we're going to make a Mystery Men movie, which, full disclosure, is a Dark Horse. This is never a comic. These were side characters from a comic called The Flaming Carrot, which nobody cares about.
I don't even care to hear you tell me that there's a comic called The Flaming Carrot.
Or it could be Captain Carrot.
No, it's Flaming Carrot.
It's Flaming Carrot.
Yeah,
okay.
Now, my thing is, well, one, I guess that begs the question, why isn't The Flaming Carrot in this movie?
Exactly.
But also, this is the question I had, because it's Dark Horse, which is, you know, under the DC umbrella.
They're not under DC. They're an independent company.
Oh, they are?
Yep.
What am I thinking of?
Vertigo.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Vertigo's
well, I guess because my question was, because a couple of other characters come up, I was wondering if this movie is supposed to take place in the DC universe.
No.
This
is the, I mean, it's a universe unto itself. The only character you could possibly, Dark Horse does a bunch of duds. They do Hellboy, which is huge.
Yeah.
And then they do, like, Star Wars adaptations.
Into comics?
Yeah, or like, extended universe Star Wars stuff. Or at least
my knowledge of the Star Wars extended universe is virtually non-existent.
Because I know they're the people behind Tank Girl.
Yes.
They're the people behind The Mask.
Yep.
Oof.
And they are the guys behind R.I.P.D.
Good gravy. How do they keep getting movies made?
I don't
Somebody saw somebody kill somebody.
It's Hellboy.
Else.
It's all Hellboy.
It's Hellboy. It's, you know, like.
But then why aren't I getting a third Hellboy movie?
This fucking Guillermo del Toro is like booked up until 2022.
Yeah, you know what, though? You got two movies as a template. Find somebody else to make that movie. Because you know what? You can pull it off at this point.
All I need is Ron Perlman before he dies to do this. Or maybe Tom Waits. Kind of the same.
Oh, man. Tom Waits is like an old Hellboy.
I'm blue boy. Like he's just got, it's Hellboy, but he's blue.
He's just wearing like denim overalls, chewing on a piece of straw for some reason.
He's playing some kind of a car horn into a fucking into a toilet seat.
I was not a product of Nazi science.
Drank too much.
Welded together by Lucifer himself.
Not much backstory to Blue Boy. So Mystery Men. I mean, this is, I guess, my other question about Mystery Men. Are people remembering what this is? Is this like a...
No.
We've all been here before?
No, nobody's been here before. I mean, it was a gigantic disaster, correct?
Yeah.
Fiscally speaking, it was...
Fiscally and otherwise, yeah.
Stay tuned, by the way. Thank you for bringing that up. Chris Cabin is starting a sister podcast called Fiscally Speaking. It's all about the numbers. It's only about the numbers.
There's a lot of mistakes in it. I'm just going to put that right down now. It's don't listen to it.
It's Chris and NPR's Kai Rizdahl.
And he's correcting me the whole time.
Yeah, it's just, Chris, come on. We have to run the numbers. And you're wasting my time. Kai Rizdahl.
Do you know basic math?
Could you just give me the definition there of basic? And then we'd be all set here.
So we start off with a very Batman-esque heist scene, but it's at an old folks' home. Oh, man, because that's what you have to remember about the Mystery Men, everybody. This movie, is it Mystery Men or The Mystery Men? It's just Mystery Men. What you have to remember about Mystery Men is that it's like every other superhero movie, except everything's just a little bit off. And that's where the jokes are supposed to come, but... There was a big hole in the movie, and all the jokes just kept falling through it into a bottomless pit.
I do want to bring that up, because, as we said before, a movie that is a lot like this is Galaxy Quest. It comes out the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And that is both a kind of like Star Trek-esque movie, actually written that way, with the jokes inside of it. This is just the jokes. The story really isn't there, and the villain versus, you know, hero stuff isn't really there.
Nope. Yeah.
It's just fucking stupid, stupid jokes.
It's really bad.
A lot of fork yourself jokes. Like,
oh, there's so... Hank Azaria as the Blue Raja. I'm not even going to try to do that voice. I'm going to sully my reputation by doing that voice on this show. But... His character, the Blue Raja, he throws fucking forks and shit.
And spoons.
There's so many. Fork yourself. Fork you. Go get forked. Oh, you know, man.
Going because, up on the fork evader. Like, it doesn't even matter that it matches up.
It's Hank, like, that one didn't even make sense. I know.
The thing is, the three main characters are Ben Stiller playing Mr. Furious, who doesn't have any superpowers, but he thinks he does.
This is Ben Stiller at his absolute worst.
It's the mode I never want to watch him in. And I like a lot of Ben Stiller stuff.
I like a lot of Ben Stiller stuff, too.
Yeah. His whole filmography probably gets a C+, which is not terrible.
Yeah.
A lot of high averages on the good ones.
Well, because the problem with Ben Stiller is he was a guy that we grew up watching and stuff, but then decided to make movies that aren't for adults.
Nope.
And that's just the thing. I mean, you know,
those... And I got no time for it. It's not my fault, not his fault.
No, but those Madagascar movies, the Night at the Museum movies, I mean, they are super successful kids' movies. He just stopped making movies we give a shit about. That's why I'm not going to say pleased with Tower Heist, but I was like, okay, enough with Tower Heist, because it was a solid adult comedy featuring also a return to crass Eddie Murphy. But that's at least him doing something non-fucking Fokker related that I can actually watch and not just be sitting there watching a kid's movie.
I mean, I know we split on this, but I love Greenberg. And I think that he has that Adam Sandler thing where 85% of it is like the worst shit you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And then there's that 15% of really fucking good movies.
Well, the thing is with Ben Stiller is when he's not trying in a movie, he like disappears because he's like, he doesn't do really strong characters unless you're doing like a Zoolander or,
right.
What is the other one there? The army one.
Oh, Tropic Thunder.
Thunder. You know, those are like broad. When he does that, I can deal with it. But when, so that's why I find him like less offensive than Sandler when he's just like getting a check. Because he's just like, I'm just going to talk like a normal person and just hang out and be like, oh, my God, a dragon.
Well,
Ben Stiller in Oh, My God, a Dragon.
That's pretty great. I think that's the subtitle of the third Night of the Museum movie. No, but the biggest difference between Stiller and Sandler is Stiller's doing movies where there's stuff going on, and it's clearly not, you know, him picking his movies based on vacation destination. You know what I mean? Because that's just all of these fucking Sandler movies. He made some joke about it on Kimmel, about how he was like, it was supposed to be, 51st Dates was supposed to be set somewhere, and then he was like, how about Hawaii, because that'll be cool. And he was like half joking, but I was like, no, Adam Sandler, like, that's... you've always kind of wanted to go to South Africa, and that's why Blended is set there, because there's no other fucking reason for it.
Yeah.
But Stiller, you know, he's still just kind of doing things that isn't Adam Sandler wearing a fucking Jets t-shirt for 2 hours. But so anyway, the mystery meant, so it's Ben Stiller as Mr. Furious.
William H. Macy as the Shoveler.
Yeah.
And the problem with William H. Macy, and literally like 5 out of 6 mystery men are like, I use this wacky thing that isn't a weapon as a weapon.
Yeah.
What else do you do? Nothing.
Nothing at all. I'm just the whatever. End it with ER.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know what, man? Fuck you. Because then the Blue Raj is just throwing spoons and he's trying to hit people with shovels. And it's like, I get that these aren't weapons and I get that it's silly. Let's move on.
Janine Garofalo's throwing a magic bowling ball all over the place as the bowler, or I guess daughter of the bowler. Who could care?
I mean, she's like the second Green Goblin, kind of. So I mean, it's one of those things where I was pissed off because I'm like, okay, so the joke is that they don't have powers. That's fine. Okay, let's stick with that. No. Two, the villain.
Yep.
And the bowler have superpowers. These are out and out superpowers.
Kel Mitchell has superpowers.
And Kel Mitchell has a superpower.
He literally turns invisible in this movie.
I apologize if you crashed your car, but Kel Mitchell was in a movie that wasn't Good Burger, and it was this movie.
And he shared a scene with Tom Waits. Nobody thought that would happen.
Nope. Not even Kel Mitchell.
But, like, why not then just give them all, like, sillier powers? Like, act it up a bit. Like, I don't need fucking William H. Macy hitting somebody with a shovel. There's 50 movies already made where William H. Macy either gets hit by a shovel or hits somebody else with a shovel.
Now, wait a second, though. So Jeffrey Rush as our villain, what is it? Acapella Frankenstein?
Casanova Frankenstein. Oh,
sound like my father. Well, what is that acapella Frankenstein business? All right, yeah. So Casanova Frankenstein, what is his actual
power?
The
fucking machine he builds.
Well, that's not really a superpower.
He's got like super nails. I mean, he's just kind of an evil scientist and he looks like Jeffrey Rush. So you think he has a superpower.
I saw Jeffrey Rush in real life one time and he looked like an actual mad scientist. It was like a very well-dressed mad scientist and he's super tall.
By the way, I had a fun little game going because I was like, Casanova Frankenstein, that's like the laziest fucking name I've ever heard of.
Lazier than the Shoveler?
Kinda. Like, because that at least almost makes sense.
Well, he's got a fucking shovel. It makes quite literal sense.
Well, no, I'm saying, the Shoveler makes sense. Casanova Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Rush ain't attractive, well, and he's not Frankenstein.
Well, no, I thought, like, okay, like,
he's
like
more Frankenstein than he is attractive.
But that's the thing. He's like a banged up, ugly monster dude that's laying pipe constantly.
I see what's going on.
But I was playing this little game in my head where you mix, like, you know, a character from, you know, literature and and with a monster. So I have Boo Radley Dracula and D'Artagnan Wolfman.
D'Artagnan Wolfman, the most distinguished of the Wolfmen. The Frenchest of the Wolfmen.
So, you know, if you just want to play a game at home, there you go.
Oh, yeah, no, Romeo, I got nothing. You really put me, you should have called me last night, Chris. I'd have 6 of them.
Wait a second. Huckleberry Creature from the Black Lagoon.
There you go.
Yeah, let's see.
So Romeo Invisible Man.
Yeah.
That doesn't flow so much, but
no.
But, not as much as Casanova Frankenstein.
The problem, I agree with you. The super, like, let's make a superhero comic thing where we have the money for special effects. Let's use them. This isn't a world that doesn't explicitly not have superpowers. So let's do that. And also the Flaming Carrot, it kind of speaks to what I believe that these comics are. I was reading up a little bit, and it's absurdist stuff.
Yeah,
and absurdist comics are fun. Like,
yeah,
they kind of don't really work in movies that often. You know, that they usually fall flat on their face because they get too literal and too real. Like, right. They try and put them in a real world, yeah, whatever. But like on a printed page, it's fun to watch just a fucking carrot fight people. It's like, that's fucking funny. Like every page you turn, like, hey, that's funny. That's even funnier. He's fucking riding the thing. You know, like, and it's fine.
That carrot's making a salad.
Exactly. And every single second, you're like, that's pretty goddamn funny and a lot of fun. But like. Absurdism, like, and absurdist movies are fun too, but like, you, for some reason, the twain shall never meet, except for kind of Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim, it works. I mean, but that's because Edgar Wright and everybody making that movie buys into that concept. Yep. And the problem with this is you're trying to ground it and make it like a Joel Schumacher or a Tim Burton Batman movie.
Yeah.
Which you can't do. It has to be either completely off the rails, silly, or not. And instead, you get Eddie Izzard. And some other dude as disco gang fighters.
Praz of the Fugees.
Oh, that's Praz?
That's Praz.
Oh, mother of God.
That's, yeah, I mean, and because it's 1999 and we loved disco jokes in 1999.
It's a real time capsule.
It really, I mean, this is as 1999 as a movie can get. I didn't see many collared sweaters in this movie, but there was plenty enough to go around.
But man. Go ahead.
No, okay. I also wanted to say, I do think, and, you know, we don't get to say thank God for M. Night Shyamalan too often.
But every now and again.
I think the key reason this movie failed so hard is it opened the same weekend as The Sixth Sense.
I saw 1.5 of them in the same day. Because this is the only movie I've ever walked out on.
That's fantastic.
I saw Sixth Sense and I was like, ooh, scary. And then I was like, but I like superheroes too. And I went across the hall and I was like, oh man, I got my Wizard magazine. They said this movie's going to be hysterical. And I watched it and I was like, oh, this is going to keep going on. And
oh, you matured in the theater.
Yes.
I
reached like sexual maturity in 3 hours.
It's like a coming of age at the movies moment.
Went from a comic book boy to a comic book man.
Then he joined that dumb Kevin Smith show. So we got Greg Kinnear in this movie, and he's supposed to be like
your Superman.
Yeah, I guess I would say closer to a Batman.
Well, because they don't really establish him whether or not he has superpowers, because he looks like he doesn't, but he might.
It just looks like the suit. It looks like the suit's mechanized.
Yeah, it's like a super suit,
like a gadget. He's an Inspector Gadget.
Yeah,
but he's a billionaire.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's also got the glasses like Superman.
Right. Well, it's a real idea.
So maybe it is more like an Iron Man type situation where he just doesn't have the helmet. Like
that
he's got
be.
An entire suit that does all the little, you know, wacky things.
He's also got a suit with a bunch of sponsorships on it, like a fucking NASCAR jacket.
That's funny because it's cynicism. It's 90s cynicism, right, everybody? But we're also making money off of it because we definitely are using real slogans and real.
Oh yeah,
it's real Pepsi. And don't worry about it. There's Pepsi in this movie.
Oh, you know what? I was watching this movie and I was drinking a Gatorade and I was like, you know, man. I wish this Gatorade was an ice cold Pepsi. It worked. It totally worked on me.
What does it leave?
But he's got a manager in famed illusionist Ricky Jay. Like he saves the day at that bank or the old folks home robbery we mentioned, where the gang is led by Artie Lang for 8.2
the
seconds.
The red eyes.
The greatest trick Ricky Jay ever pulled was making the world believe he had a career.
Ricky Jay is huge in the world of magic.
Well, in the world of magic, yes.
Like that. Do you ever see that documentary about him?
The I remember the poster.
It's pretty fascinating. He was on like the Tonight Show a lot in the 70s and stuff. It's like he really had that magic racket going. But then David Mamet was like, why don't you act in my movies?
Yeah, they're like best buds. I saw them do a talk together once, and it was just the most boring thing I've ever
Let done. Me guess, it was 98% not Ricky Jay speaking.
You're accurate on that guess.
One of the circles of Steve Sadak hell is sitting down with a group of magicians, listening to them talk about their craft. Just like just being stuck in a room with a bunch of magicians just telling all the old magician stories.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad, and they're all doing card tricks, and they want you. Have you ever had someone do a magic trick for you where it's just you and someone else like, hey man, I'm a magician, and you're like, uh-huh, and they're like, no, wait, pick a card. I'm like, oh my god, I'm not 7 years old, and at the end of this, I have to be surprised, or
you
else
know, this
he's going to do another one.
Is right here on my fucking plate.
If you want an amazing experience, I don't know if this movie ever came out, because I get a lot of stuff that comes across my desk
That's
never going to see the light of day, but there was this movie. It's a documentary about little kid magicians that go to magic camp. The laughs never stop. Like, you know how you watch those like kid-centric documentaries, like Spellbound, where there's like wacky kids and you laugh at them?
Sure.
Think about that, but they're also rehearsing magic routines.
I just don't understand why you would do that to it. Like, why would a parent say, look, what I want to do is send my kid to magic camp because in a couple of years I want a psychiatry bill? It's A to B here, guys. It's not like there's any stop off.
Well, it's like, okay, you know, when I was a little kid, I will fully confess, I had an interest in magic. Like, I had a couple of magic books, and I could do some card tricks and ring tricks and what like that, and I grew out of it. So it's like, these kids are going there. It helps with, like, you know, social skills and everything. It's totally fine. But on the outside, just watching it, it's so fucking entertaining, because it's just kids, like, getting yelled at and, like, getting frustrated that their stage presence isn't great. And, like, the best is, well, there's the kids who are really into it and they take it super seriously.
Sure.
But then there's the kids that are terrible at it. And it's like the parents just paid money to be like, just go here. Get out of my fucking face for a couple of weeks. Oh, they're so bad. Because if there's one thing that's worse than magic, oh, it's bad magic.
Every 3 months, they have to fucking kill the bunny. Like, they got to bury the bunny in the backyard. Oh, we got to get another Ruffles in here.
One of these days, Milton is going to get the hang of this trick. But until then, please welcome Ruffles the 7th.
Well, that's why you get rabbits. They keep fucking. You get a new rabbit.
But so Ricky Jay is the manager, and it's a lot of horse shit. Like, the whole gimmick of this movie is that this guy, what is he, Captain Amazing.
Captain Amazing. That took 6 seconds to write.
Yeah. That's one of those placeholder things that somehow made it all the way into the movie. Captain Amazing.
At it.
Yeah. He's so amazing at being Captain Amazing that there's no more crime left in Champion City. And it's going through, like, what about this guy? Oh, he's doing 2 life sentences. What about this guy? Got the death penalty. What about Casanova Frankenstein? Oh, he's up for parole. And that's, like, the biggest bit of horseshit in this movie is that because he doesn't want to go out of business or lose sponsorship, he being Greg Kinnear as Captain Amazing, goes to the parole hearing and, like, says, like, oh, I've got a note from Captain Amazing that says that he's reformed and he should come out just so he can fucking have crime to fight. It's so dumb.
In a very Burton-esque looking parole hearing scene, like, a lot of long angle.
Yeah,
you know,
you're totally, like, right. That shot of looking, like, down at Jeffrey Rush.
Yes, and the reveal of him reading the letter and it being his fucking grocery list. That is a Burton reveal if I've ever seen one, so I'm with you.
And we should keep an eye out for these as the conversation continues. Yeah.
Jeffrey Rush kind of looks like, he looks exactly like the Marquis de Sade in this scene. He's just a little Quills joke for anybody.
He also kind of looks like Gary Oldman in that third Harry Potter movie, like before he gets out of jail.
It would be great if Jeffrey Rush just, and then Casanova Frankenstein got up and just put his hand in his asshole and started writing things on the wall.
Man, Jeffrey Rush shows cock in that movie, and God bless him, because it was cold on that set.
Yeah,
they're filming in that castle, That guy was hiding.
Anybody know if Jeffrey Rush called J.K. Rowling a bitch at any point? Because I can't imagine why else he wouldn't be in Harry Potter. Like, literally, like, how did they miss him? I mean, I guess it was probably, once Voldemort goes to Ralph Fiennes, Jeffrey Rush's like, ah, fuck.
Yeah. Because he's either playing the big villain or nothing.
I think it was him or Gary Oldman. I think that's the role he really wanted.
That's, I mean,
you know what? He probably called J.K. Rowling a strumpet.
Strumpet.
That's probably what got her.
He was stuck in traffic. He's like, look at this stupid cow. Like, come on, get out of here, you silly cow. And she's like, I'm a billionaire. He's like, I don't care, you stupid cow.
This is actually my clone that you're talking to right now. I have three of these.
Well, sometimes, like, if you're like going back and watching like a Mike Lee movie, and you know, because like Lee uses his stable of English actors, most of them went on to be in Harry Potter movies, and you're watching like old Mike Lee movies, and you're like, well, why wasn't that person in Harry Potter?
Exactly.
Like, how did this person miss the Harry Potter train? I guess it would be the Hogwarts Express.
Well, now it's going to be, I mean, maybe Jeffrey Rush will, you know, mend some fences and be in that Beasts and How to Know Them or whatever.
Oh, yeah, they're turning that into like three movies.
Yeah,
huh?
Of course. You got to do 4 to 5 of those. It's one story. You need at least 5 stories to tell one story.
Peter Jackson the fuck out of that book.
Tell a story in less than 9 hours, you must be out of your fucking mind.
I would like to get the head count on people in the world still interested in that third Hobbit film.
It gets less and less every day.
I mean, at this point, you just got to do to get the fuck over with. Like, what? I mean, really, at this point, it's just getting it the fuck over with.
I know, but it's like, I didn't even see the second one.
I kind of defend the second one. I liked the whole smog thing. I thought was great.
You know what burned me about the first one though is I saw it in that high frame rate.
Yeah,
ruined the whole thing.
It's a bit of a problem.
Looked like a shit video game.
You know what didn't burn you in that first one? A dragon, because there's no fucking dragon in that movie.
You know what? There's a lot of shadow of dragons though.
A lot
so
of
that's
you know
something.
Pantry jokes. Yeah, a lot of those strong ones.
Ben Stiller and oh my god, a dragon.
I want that movie.
So, I mean, they're just losers. They like, you know, so Casanova Frankenstein gets out of jail. He blows up an insane asylum. He sidles up to Lena Olin, who's in this movie, as his psychiatrist. And you think that's going to be a relationship that happens. And, like, she's his number two. And here comes a sexy villain.
No, yeah. she like, goes...
She literally just disappears from this movie.
Yeah, she had to go on vacation away from Champion City for most of the movie.
Well, I mean, do remember that every time that you think you're about to see a character emerge in this movie, you're wrong. You're dead fucking wrong. Because Casanova Frankenstein isn't really a character either.
No.
And it bothers the shit out of you because there's no conflict.
No, there's not. He's a villain, and he's like, I have a villain machine that's going to villain something.
And I'm going to rule Champion City. Where is your fucking plan? Why are you doing this?
And he's not funny, and Jeffrey Rush can be very funny.
He can be incredibly funny. Well, that is the thing. Everyone in this movie, let's not get nuts. Well, I guess I've laughed at Kel Mitchell a couple times in my childhood.
Sure.
But I mean.
You know who didn't? Lorne Michaels.
Oh, can I tell you something great? So, like 3 weeks ago, I was going to see the X-Men movie.
Yeah.
And I'm walking down the street, and it was in Midtown, and I fucking hate Midtown, you know, so I just got my head down, hating life till I get to the theater.
Sure.
And I'm walking, and I cross the street. I'm walking down 42nd Street. I see this little wiener dog, and I'm like, oh, look at that little wiener dog. He's such a little wiener. That's great. And then I look up, and there's this huge, tall guy, this huge, tall, big man walking this dog. And I was like, ha-ha, that's even great. It's a little dog and a big man. Icing on the cake, that big man, Kenan Thompson, just walking this tiny little dog. And we make eye contact, and he's like, yeah, I know you're looking at me because I'm walking a small dog. I'm a big-ass dude walking a small dog.
Because I mean, like, come on, but you're Kenan Thompson. You're famous. You're famous. Get someone to walk up on a dog. Man, it's got to burn Kel so bad that he made it on Saturday Night Live, right? It's just got to.
But, I mean, I've seen a Kenan Thompson in a couple of things that's not SNL.
Yeah.
That fucking Fat Albert movie.
Yeah.
He's way more talented of an actor than Kel Mitchell. As you see Kel in this movie.
His timing is way better.
He's just a funnier guy. Yeah. And you see Kel in this movie and you're like, how did you even get on the Nickelodeon shows?
Well, he's probably the most ill-defined of all of the mystery men, if such a thing could exist. Because everybody's got their type. Like, you know, Hank Azaria lives with his mother. And, you know, it's that shit. you know.
Did everybody hear my frustrated sigh? Yeah. I hope that went on the air.
You want to do it again? Take two? Yeah, that's... we'll go with two.
Well, because the one thing I wanted to interrupt about Hank Azaria living with his mother is because last week you were doing the fucking Rodney push button warning.
Sure.
In this movie, he's living with his mother. It's the whole like don't come in my room shit. And the mother has the old, are you on the marijuana joke?
Adding the to an indefinite article to marijuana. Congratulations!
It makes her square, you see.
Oh, I see. Because the kids don't call it that, do they, Andrew?
No, they don't. Oh, I hate that shit.
I hate the get out of my room mom joke. I really fucking despise
it. Oh, honey, you're so off kilter. You must be on the drug things.
Like, no, but he does walk around pretending to be this British Indian colonial gentleman. You should probably have that looked into.
Yeah. A deep-seated issue.
That's another terrible thing is, like, he's talking in this, like, you know, English Indian accent type thing because it's Hank Azaria, so he's got to do a voice. And then the like, joke on top of the joke is that when the mom comes in, it's like, Ma, you know, and he drops the accent, and you're like, oh boy, is that just terrible?
I mean, if he wasn't a mystery man, he'd be a catfish, though, right? Like, there's no other two.
Wait, he now, what does it mean if you are the catfish? You're leading people on, or you're being led?
You're leading people on. You are the catfish.
Oh, yeah, I swear to God, I'm a billionaire.
I'm a sexy woman. Click, 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 click. Send me all the pictures. Click, 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 click.
Yeah, I do want to touch on like everyone's home life, at least out of these like three mains.
Plus 10 points in this movie for William H. Macy. He's a henpecked husband, but he is in an interracial relationship, which gets no comment. Plus 10 points.
Yeah. Exactly.
It was 1999. That shit was pretty rare back then.
He totally didn't do it, and it's fucking awesome. It's like...
Not interracial relationships. Obviously, interracial relationships.
No,
in movies.
In movies, yes. Yeah. It's not 1960s Alabama. It wasn't against the law.
We repealed those laws at that point.
But it's awesome because it's like he comes home and he makes mention of the wife before. Like, oh, my wife's going to have my balls.
Yeah.
And then he goes home and he walks by a family portrait and it's him, a black woman, and three multiracial kids. And it's awesome. And it's just nobody fucking says anything. Like, there's no line. He has a party at his house. A bunch of people come over. And there's no, like, that's your wife.
Yeah.
Which, like, I'm sorry. This is a rotten-ass fucking movie written by idiots. Like, that line could have easily made its way.
Oh, yeah, and that shit was all over the 90s. I mean, look at Me, Myself, and Irene's got that shit. It's like, I got black kids. And I mean, that's a joke. But at the same time, not... Like, there's so much of that shit going on in the 90s where it's like... It denotes something weird, like a character weakness if you're in an interracial relationship.
Right, yeah.
But this is just a movie where it's like, hey, this shit happens. This is the world we live in and shut up about it.
I want
one credit to Mystery Men.
I want to watch a movie where it's them living their life and dealing with like possibly getting shit on for it or getting support for it. I want to see their love story.
Yeah.
I want to see all of that.
John Cassavetes, The Shoveler.
Shadows 2, The Shoveler.
Just shovels. No, just call it shovels.
Here's a problem. What the fuck does William H. Macy do for a living? Nothing? Like, does he just...
Yeah,
do...
nothing.
I mean, coal miner?
She says you've been doing this for 12 years, which is nuts. Like, that makes you such a loser, man.
I mean, that
like,
brings
really...
up that thank you for this, because I need to get this out of the way.
Please.
There is nothing more pathetic, ignorant and stupid than people in the real world, in our world, that walk around pretending to be superheroes.
Nope.
That shit, that fucking dude in Seattle, whatever that guy was a couple years back.
Phoenix Jones.
Yeah. All these morons that dress up. Just give me a break. Go get a job. Stay at home and don't have a job. I don't give a fuck. Just don't do this because it's the worst thing I've ever seen. And it doesn't translate to interesting movie making either. I'll guarantee you that.
Why not do something like if you're in that situation? Why not? I mean, I always assume they all got fucking like turned down by the cops.
Oh yeah,
every single one.
That's
my assumption every single time.
Absolutely.
You could have been doing something genuinely good for society, but you're either such a fat fuck that you can't fucking make it over the wall.
Well, that's like those fat guys in like Dark Knight that are dressing up like Batman.
Hockey pads.
Or more than likely, you have a severe psychological issue.
More than likely.
There's something that kept you from getting accepted to the police academy.
It's you're the guy that needs to be on the side of the road dressed like, you know, take a picture with Batman, but then you're like, maybe I am Batman. No, you're not.
You're
a dangerous loner, and you should just...
Your name's Daniel. Just remember that. My name's Daniel, not Bruce. Not Bruce Wayne.
I mean, it's just so fucking stupid. Like, you know who's a hero? A fucking firefighter.
Exactly.
That's a hero. An EMT. A fucking hero cop. Any of these things.
And you know what doesn't work in the real world? Superheroes. Because it's not black and white. There's no supervillains.
And I'm just going to shoot you in the face.
Yep.
If I'm a criminal and Phoenix fucking Jones comes up to me, I'm going to take buckshot to his jaw, and that's the last time anyone will hear of fucking Phoenix Jones.
Guess what? A little bit of surprise for you. That tinfoil mask you got on, not adamantium.
Exactly. It's so dumb. And they always crop up. Anytime, like a movie, like when the Kick-Ass movies come out, it happened both times because you have to hear about it when these movies come out.
Of course.
These real-life vigilantes. Here, application to Dunkin' Donuts. Get out of my face. You wanted to be a cop? Go serve cops donuts. It's almost the same thing. It's the closest you're going to get to being a cop.
Do you know how to use a microwave? That's all you need to know to work at Dunkin' Donuts.
There's more to it than that, Chris.
Well, they don't even bake the fucking donuts there. They're delivered on a truck. Dunkin' Donuts is the biggest scam of all time. To make the donuts? Once that dude died, they started trucking them in.
Yeah.
Because that little guy wasn't there to make the donuts at dawn.
To every franchise.
He's like the Santa Claus at Dunkin' Donuts.
Oh, don't microwave it. You'll ruin it.
Well, he'll be dead soon. We'll make these donuts this one last time.
Can't wait till he's fucking dead so I can microwave these goddamn donuts.
Well, I think he figured out like the perfect donut recipe, and they've just been working off his donuts. He worked so hard during all those years making the donuts every morning that they're just working off a surplus of what they've had for all those years.
So... goddamn mystery men. So Jeffrey Rush blows up this nut house, and Greg Kinnear shows up to be like, oh, we're playing this game again, are we? I'll capture you now. And then, whoops, he gets kidnapped by Jeffrey Rush because he flew too close to the sun or something.
He gets gassed. Because it's a whole fucking joke. It's a stupid-ass joke again where he's like, oh, what's this? A fucking, you know, rubber dildo? And then he opens it up, and a big thing of gas hits him.
And dude, if it was a huge like rubber dildo and something shot out in Greg Kinnear's face, great gag, Mystery Men.
Well, what this movie loves to do, and poor old Tom Waits has to do the brunt of it, is like mad scientist garbage gags where it's like, it's a self-defibrillating such and such. It's an electromagnetic, you know, like it's just, it goes, there's 100 of these. Someone bought a fucking kid's joke book full of mad scientist puns and just used them all.
It's like, you know how Star Trek, you know, if you read up about like production stuff with Star Trek, like they always have like the science advisor, who they call in and they're like, read this script and let us know the words we can use to make this fucking gobbledygook sound believable.
Yeah.
That dude was busy for Mystery Men. And it's all just names of kids' Nerf toys.
That guy had a heart attack on the highway on the way over. And they're like, well, we gotta pay his widow something, you know? Like, I mean, after that's done, we've got no money left. Oh, no, Tim Burton's leaving.
It's all falling apart.
I like the idea of Tim Burton directing this movie in a Phantom of the Opera mask.
I'm the mystery man.
No, Kyle. You have to do it this way.
It's actually very interesting. In the first scene you see of him, when he's going to get parole, his hair is in front of his face. And actually, it was played by Johnny Depp for that one scene.
An even funnier idea is that Tom Waits just didn't give a shit and thought Jeffrey Rush was Tim Burton.
Oh, I guess Tim Burton's directing this movie. Weird.
He seems like the head honcho around here.
That man carries himself with a lot of authority.
Jeffrey Rush is just like, he's not giving Tim Burton direction. He's like, wow, that AD's doing a lot of work.
I didn't know Tim Burton was like a Warren Beatty type getting in the scenes.
Now I really want to read like Jeffrey Rush's autobiography.
You know, Tom kept on coming up to me and kept on asking me what his goals were. what his engine was.
And I said, I don't give a fuck. You're a nothing character. I'm the main villain.
I told him I'm a huge fan. I love Swordfish Trombones, but I don't know what to tell you here, Tom.
And to keep the joke train rolling, Ben Stiller works at a junkyard.
Junk it!
Listen, there is a recurring gag in this movie that is not funny. It's an anti-gag.
Yeah.
Is the whole, like, I'm going to go back and forth with a character in an argumentative tone. This happens between Ben Stiller and the junkyard lady. It happens between Ben Stiller and Janine Garofalo quite a bit in this movie. It's the you do this. No, you do that. No, you do this. No, you do that. And it goes on.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk about Denzel Washington always playing the cop role, fucking Ben Stiller is always getting yammered at by women, by older women. Yeah. Like, every single movie, some older woman's got to give him the business because it's supposed to be the funniest fucking thing in the world. And this one goes on for much longer than it should.
It's intolerable.
And she's only got one scene, and you would think, like, it was Blythe Danner or somebody. Like, it's just some old lady they pulled off the street, off the bus, and it's like, why are we giving this woman such gravitas? Why does this movie need to be 2 hours long?
This movie, for everybody keeping score, is 2 minutes shorter than Star Wars. So, you know what? It's as long as Star Wars.
Yeah.
Which is very frustrating.
Yeah, it's a theater experience, it's as long as Star Wars. With the previews and everything.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's equal now.
It's 1,000 parsecs worse, I'll tell you that much.
Ew. So, you know, they hear that Captain Amazing has been kidnapped, and they're like, "Oh, we got a fucking
chance.
We got to do something about it." Because they meet him earlier in the movie at the old folks' heist,
where he's picking up grannies.
And you know, they're like, "Oh, he snubbed us. He's a dick. We'll never be as good as Captain Amazing." Well, now's our chance to save him. You know, clearly he must have been kidnapped by Casanova Frankenstein. But we're only three people. You know what we need is a team. And this is, like, I think the most famous part of the movie is this audition sequence, because this shit was all over the trailer.
Also happens to be my least favorite scene in the sequence in the entire movie.
Well, I think it's everybody's.
It's a runner. It's concentrated what this movie really wants to be, which is, like, isn't it a silly superhero name?
But it gets, like, so much. This is where this movie tips into being, like, kind of, like, shitty. Not offensive necessarily, but just out there. Just, you shouldn't be doing this, guys.
Yeah.
The PMS Avenger.
I only work 4 days a month. Is everybody following along to the PMS Avenger joke? Once again, she only works 4 days a month.
And she's got a red suit on.
Oh, mercy me.
If she was a full-on Mystery Man character, her fucking real name would be Flo, and then some old fucking vet would laugh, and that's it. Some old lonely vet would laugh.
We got Dane Cook as the Waffler.
And this is the 90s because both Kel Mitchell and Dane Cook have bleach blonde hair. Because you need to do that shit, man. You either have a fucking a collar on your sweater, you've got bleach blonde hair, you're wearing a chamois shirt of some kind.
Oh, yeah.
Some kind of silver jewelry's got to be everywhere. And goggles upon goggles.
Yeah, like the sunglasses goggles. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like what Seth Green wears and Can't Hardly Wait. Yep. Like those goggles all over the place.
I think most members of Power Man 5000 had these.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
That was a goggle-tastic group, Chris.
Yeah, this whole thing brings to mind another time capsule film that the missus and I watched the other night. Watch that Josie and the Pussycats movie.
Yeah.
And I still stand by, it's like a decently funny movie.
That's a decently funny movie.
But we weren't watching it for show purposes. We were like, oh, wow, haven't seen this in a while. But man, that movie, like none of that movie exists anymore.
Nope.
Like it is a time capsule if you've ever seen one. You're just looking at everything, like the actors that are in it, the things that they're talking about. Like, there's, I think the thing that only exists today still is fucking Alan Cumming and Target. Like, that's it. Like, you're just watching it, like, TRL's a main plot point and Carson Daly's a villain and all this other shit. And you're just like, none of this is real. Tara Reid doesn't exist anymore. The Egg Girl, Rachel Lee Cook.
Do you think on 9/11, Carson Daly was just like, well, my day is done. Just like, he figured it out. It's like, oh, fuck, no one's going to give a shit about me anymore.
Yeah, no, now I got to go have a show that starts at 12:30 because this is a different America.
My America has ended.
Yeah, I feel like the reign of TRL ended with 9/11. It's entirely possible. So
one of they pick up Janine Garofalo.
Yes, we get Janine Garofalo as the bowler. And also we didn't mention, they hang out in a diner quite a bit where Claire Forlani is a put-upon waitress, and that's all she is.
I mean, it's really just like a sitcom. Like, it's beats of sitcom. Yeah. Like, a Mystery Men TV show would be terrible, but if they, like, tried a season and then cobbled it together into a movie, it would be this.
Well, because it's just like, and then they're sitting at a diner, and you're just like, oh, well, for God's sake, how many times are these superheroes going to sit at this fucking diner and order a sandwich?
But, Andrew, isn't it hysterical that superheroes would be at a diner? Isn't that making you your gut bust? Like, I mean, have you ever seen Superman order a cup of coffee? I haven't.
The Flash wants an egg white omelet.
And he might get a little frustrated.
In one of these sequences where they're hanging out at the diner, we can't forget one of the most important Mystery Men doing his best Emo Phillips impression is Paul Reubens as the Spleen. The Spleen, whose power is shooting farts at people. I know, everybody, you had to pull your car over because that's the funniest thing we've said yet.
And they're really smelly, too. Like, super duper smell. Like, you know, clear an airplane out.
They make like people pass out. You've been eating, like, deviled eggs for 4 days kind of farts. You know what I mean?
They were mostly in mayonnaise.
You ate, like, two-thirds of a Crave case the night before. And then you woke up and you found, like, ooh, like, egg salad breakfast. And you had it. And then you thought you could go to work that day. And then you're like, oh, fuck, I'm going to get fired.
So you sat in your car in the parking lot while your asshole falls out of your body.
Exactly. Drinking extra gold.
Oh, yeah, some fucking serious banquet beer. But that's, I mean, we're just sitting here, and it's just a scene where Pee-wee Herman tells you he's got the smelliest farts in the continental U.S., and then aims farts at people and shoots them in the face with farts.
But what's stupid is he needs to get his finger pulled, which is touch bullshit.
Like, fart.
I've always hated that. Like, you don't need your, like, it's a bad fucking dad joke, and I get it.
If no one pulls my finger, I'm going to explode and we're going to have problems here.
Yeah, it becomes a real problem in the middle of this fucking movie.
Look, I'm not Batman unless I can start the scene hanging up from the ceiling.
Listen, here's the other thing, though. Okay, the Spleen. If you really need your finger pulled in order for you to pass gas in someone's face, pull your own fucking finger.
Exactly.
Why does it have to be somebody else's finger?
Why don't you have, like, and this is just me trying to get into the mind of this asshole who wrote this.
Oh, I thought you said asshole. I thought you were talking about the Spleen.
No, not his asshole necessarily.
And why isn't he the colon?
Yeah.
Why does he have a sidekick whose job it is to pull his finger?
Well, he does. That's
Vern Troyer shows
up.
Yep,
there we go.
No, you guys, that's what Kel Mitchell winds up doing for most of the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
They are kind of like partnered up when they go on little missions, and all he does is pull Pee-wee Herman's finger.
I'm just imagining Kel's resume, and just, you know, it's got, you know, Mystery Man, it's like lead, Invisible Boy. The only bullet point is pulled Pee-wee Herman's finger. That's
it. And also, it's
like... You need those verbs in your resume, by the way. You need to start with a strong verb, so pulled is a good one.
I just don't understand why... I was thinking about, like, the design of this character of the Spleen. Like, yeah, he looks like Emo Phillips, and if you don't know who I'm talking about, look him up. You may also get a picture of Fred Stoller, but it's closer to Emo Phillips.
Sure.
But it's like, why does he have to have the pimples on top of everything?
Because he's a loser, Andrew. Yeah. I think he might be a lovable loser.
Oh, he's not, though, because he's farting everywhere. I don't want to love someone that farts in my face.
No. It would be so much funnier if he was like, if he actually looked like a real superhero.
Yeah.
Like, if he was like a Superman or like a Batman type. Really handsome
guy. Very distinguished. And you get a Nathan Fillion type playing this role.
And then he's just blowing ass everywhere.
That'd be great.
That's how the joke works. You don't get the ugliest sewer treading looking character and then also have him rip fucking ass. It's either he's handsome and he farts, mm-hmm. or he's ugly and he's like super strong, whatever. You can't have him be both, because then it's just a goblin, and I don't want him on my superhero team.
No, I really. He actually kind of does look like Dane DeHaan's Green Goblin just a little bit.
Yeah.
There's been so many great descriptions of what Dane DeHaan in that movie looks like. And I don't remember who said it, but someone said something like, it looks like he's like a lizard with stage 4 cancer or something like that. He looks utterly terrible.
He's a jaundiced werewolf in that movie.
See, it's things like that. It's great.
It's a fun meme. I mean, like, so the mystery, and, you know, Gina Garofalo is just sarcastic Gina Garofalo. She's doing fine in this movie. This is like,
she's kind of the best one.
She's a professional. She just shows up to do the fucking jokes.
This is prime Gina Garofalo. She's super sarcastic. It works. And she does have really good chemistry with Ben Stiller. So, like, because he's not doing the Ben Stiller I'm angry guy when he's talking to Gina Garofalo. He's just kind of doing bits.
But what's weird is at the beginning, when they're having these tryouts at William H. Macy's pool party, she shows up late, and Ben Stiller is like his character is a real asshole to her for seemingly no reason.
Yeah.
Other than like he's frustrated that he's on a bad team of fake superheroes. So whose fault is that, Ben Stiller? It's not fucking the bowler's fault.
No, it's because she has an actual power.
Oh, I see.
And he's getting like frustrated. Everybody else is like, oh man, this is so great. None of us can do fucking anything. Here's somebody who can do fucking something.
And this is like the first time in this movie where we're introduced to out and out magic, because she's got this magic bowling ball with the skull of her father inside it.
A Mars Attacks looking skull, everybody. Point one for Tom Waits.
Yeah, you're totally right. Let's chalk it up. And
he also thinks Maggie Smith was in Dracula, but it was actually just Gary Oldman in drag.
Yeah, she had this whole bouffant going, and I mean, she looked a little peak. I'm gonna say it. I'll tell you, Maggie Smith's pretty scary in person. And I mean, look, you know, I'm not gonna call anybody out, but she needs a manicure. Long ass nails.
Did you guys know Anthony Hopkins turned out to be in that movie? Boy, I wasn't paying attention.
It really lost it, man. There's a lovely young girl named Keanu.
I just love him being horrendously clueless about everything he's been a part of. Yeah, that Seven Psychopaths was great. Turned out Colin Farrell was in that movie.
I learned 2 years later.
And it was
still haven't seen it, though.
Real honor. Real honor meeting Jimmy Stewart.
I mean, Mr. Waits, please sit down.
But I mean, it's very Mars Attacks-ish, this skull.
It is, you're right. So, the whole thing is the bowling ball's magic because she can throw it, and it goes all over the place. It's not just bouncing off of things. Like, it's little Janine Garofalo throwing a bowling ball, and it hits all sorts of things. It supposedly has a mind of its own. Because
the soul of her dead father.
Yeah. Right. Which is, I mean, it's a magic thing. And it takes you completely by surprise in the movie, because I'm sitting here like, I thought the whole thing was this movie's just losers that throw silverware and fart at you.
Yes.
But even the farting is magic.
Yes.
Because Pee Wee Herman like looks at these people and he's just like, okay, that guy, and that guy. And it's like, toot, toot, toot. And they all get hit in the face by farts. Magic farting.
And again, the mystery men are like, oh, fuck, who wants this guy on our team? He's the only guy that could do anything. That's a valuable skill. Doesn't involve a fucking shovel or a fork.
Or throwing a tantrum. Which is all Ben Stiller's doing.
I hate Ben Stiller in this movie.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. Like, I feel the fury inside of me when I think about how obnoxious he is in this movie. Like, I said this before we went on the air, but if anyone hasn't seen this movie, try to figure out, like, what sort of mindset Ben Stiller is or what kind of Ben Stiller he's doing. Everybody's probably seen Meet the Parents. The scene at the end of the movie where he yells at the stewardess and you can't say bomb on an airplane and whatever. Yeah. And he's getting very fast talking and loud. And it's just that one scene.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden Robert De Niro's bailing him out of jail. He's doing that for this whole movie.
It's that episode of Friends that he does. Like, for instead of 6 minutes, it's
90 minutes of just him in this 2-hour movie, because he is our main character that we love so much.
Even when he's done over the top villains like Heavyweights
Dodgeball,
Happy Gilmore, Dodgeball, all those movies, it's still like he's playing like a sly villain, and it's fine. Like, if he's not even making villains go over the top, why are you doing this? Like, it's just, it's the absolute worst.
More off the IMDb trivia. Ben Stiller asked to be released from this movie halfway through.
Good for him.
Yeah.
No, honestly, good for him.
He got into a fight with Greg Kinnear, and he was like, I just want to get out of this fucking movie.
Really? Getting in a fight with Greg Kinnear? Yeah. They barely have a scene together.
They barely, I think that's on purpose.
You think Tim Burton was like, well, if Stiller's trying to get out of this, I can definitely get out of this. I'm not in front of the fucking camera.
Let's go ahead and parlay this.
He's like, Tim, what do you want to do with this scene? You turn around, there's just nothing but purple smoke. Like, wait, what?
There's a cloud of Tim Burton-shaped purple smoke, and hanging right at the top of it is a pair of fake Dracula teeth.
Where did he go? We've got so much of this movie to finish.
Oh, my God.
And, I mean, so we're the mystery men now. Oh, and Kel Mitchell's superpower is he says he can turn invisible, but only when no one's looking at him, which is kind of funny, and that happens. So we finally this is when the mystery men meet Casanova Frankenstein 50 times in this movie, fight him 50 times, fail 50 times. And, like, have to regroup and be like, well, that wasn't so funny. What else can we do?
Well, none of those jokes hit. Let's get back to him tomorrow.
It just keeps happening.
Well, they make their first, like, big standoff. It's like, oh, is that his car? Let's follow him. And then they, like, cut him off in a tunnel and just get out and, like, stomp on his car.
And then guys with guns, actual fucking guns, are scared by a motherfucker with a shovel and a guy who farts.
Not a motherfucker. William H. Macy. I could beat up William H. Macy.
I beat up William H. Macy yesterday.
He took his lunch money.
He owed me the VIG. What do you want?
Just, again, shooting everybody in the face. Just shooting them all in the fucking face.
Don't even bring that element into it. Like, why are you doing?
They're sitting in the car, and Janine Garofalo's got this bowling ball, and she's like, okay, Eddie Izzard, don't move because I'm going to throw this bowling ball at you. And inside the limo, Eddie Izzard is just polishing a fucking handgun. And I'm like, get it over with.
Well, it's hard for Eddie Izzard to fire a gun when he's trying to do an American accent.
Oh, you stole the joke. If you didn't finish it that way, that was going to be my follow-up B joke. But you're totally right.
It's the worst.
Bad. Yeah. And again,
he's bad.
Just use your voice.
Why can't he be a British disco guy?
He's a talented actor. He's very eloquently spoken.
Yeah.
Just do it.
That's him on Hannibal. He's just never had an American accent worth a damn.
No, it's bad on Hannibal. It was bad on that show, The Riches.
Yeah, it kind of ruined The Riches.
It was, I mean, that the first season of that show was okay. The second season was really bad, and we never finished it, but it's distracting how bad. And I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to believe that you're a fucking gypsy?
Not everybody's Hugh Laurie. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It doesn't work for everybody. And it's fine. Like, most of the time, he could just be a British guy. He could be a British guy in Hannibal. He could be a British fucking disco asshole in this.
I forget. Does he have an accent in the Ocean's movies?
I think he's British in the Ocean's.
I think he's just Eddie Izzard in those
movies.
Is he?
Yeah. Okay. Because I had a thing in my mind that he actually was doing. And for a minute, I was thinking, is it just him? Does he just, like, does he do it? Like, because you could just ask the guy and be like, can I just talk normal?
I mean, I guess there are American parts. You're like, you can do an American accent. Yeah.
But I mean, it's just, and I know that this obviously works the other way as well when English people are listening to us butcher their accents. But,
oh, sure.
You know, you have to, like, pick a region and do it. You know, that's obviously a lot easier.
He's just doing this flat thing.
He's trying to just not speak the way he speaks.
Yeah.
And, you know, he thinks, like, if he just dulls down the way he talks, that's him doing an American accent. And it's not. I'm not saying you have to do, like, a fucking Brooklyn gangster voice, but, I mean, just do
something.
Do anything. Make a choice. Or just choose to be Eddie Izzard because you're great. And don't distract your acting ability. Like, don't distract your performance.
You stilt your performance. You stall your performance consistently.
Exactly. Hank Azaria, on the other hand, is doing like four different fucking voices in this movie.
I mean, he's wearing a fucking turban throughout this movie. I mean, like, come on, everybody.
Pre-9/11, it wasn't offensive yet.
I mean, like, and he keeps making, I mean, it's kind of a joke about, like, I mean, first of all, everybody knows what the fucking history of India and England is, first of all. And he's like, hey, everybody, the history of India and England. And everyone's like, wait, what? It's like, yeah, I know. We've all seen that first Temple of Doom, all right? When the Brits come in and save everybody, because that's exactly what India needed. Thanks a lot, Steven Spielberg. I apologize.
You know, Steven, if we set the second film in India, there's a lot of great political subtext we could put into it. Also, monkey brains.
Also, there could be a Sarlacc under the main job. Let's
just let you know, Sebulba is available. He's... Sebulba in a turban, Steven.
And it's not that old shitty Sarlacc. It's the brand new CGI Sarlacc.
It's the special edition Sarlacc, Steven. I don't think you've seen it yet. Because every time I ask you, hey, Steven, did you see the new special editions? You keep saying you'll get to it next weekend.
It's next weekend.
Watch my special editions.
It has seven tongues to hold up my turkey neck.
So, I mean, like, it's literally fail, fail, fail. And they're like, we need one more person for our team. And then another person with superpowers shows up. Which
it's this dude. Yeah, what is it? The Phoenix?
The Sphinx.
The Blue Sphinx?
Or no, I think it's just the Sphinx.
Oh, just the Sphinx.
It's okay. Westudy. Goddamn yes. Westudy in this fucking movie.
Well, because why not?
I mean, he was in, like, doesn't he play, he's Street Fighter, he's one of the guys.
He plays Sagat.
He is Sagat. So, I guess it kind of makes sense, but man, fucking, you worked with Michael Mann. Come on here.
Yeah, exactly. You're amazing in Last of the Mohicans. Like, get out of town being in Mystery Man.
And he's just doing, like, a bunch of, like, you know, I'm the wise character, guess why.
to camp.
They do go. This movie goes to camp. They go to out and out superhero camp. It's just like these idiot old people that pay to go to rock camp. Oh my God.
Just buy a fucking guitar and go home.
That's, you know what? That's a podcast for another day. Rock and roll camps. Okay? Get out of my fucking face with rock and roll camps.
This is when I left the movie.
So this is when you walked out. Steve Zadek in 1999 literally got up and left the theater. I guess your bones had de-chilled enough from The Sixth Sense.
Yes. My spine stopped tingling, and I was like, wait, what is going on here?
I kind of imagine that you're just like, your mind's so blown from the ending. You're just like, you're just trying to like piece it all back together.
You're just like walked in.
Mr. Men's just happening, and all of a sudden you're like, oh man, that was great. Okay, now I'll focus on this movie. I'm out of here. Fuck you. Get out of here.
The pot brownie wore off and you were like, oh no, I'm coming down.
Here it comes.
I thought this was the parking lot. I'm not home right now. No.
So they go to camp and like Wes Studi's giving them all sorts of sage advice about how to fix their characters, which they don't really take that well because they're still assholes at the end of this movie.
All of the most unlikable characters put together in one superhero
and
group.
And the most unlikable, Ben Stiller, is like, screw this, I'm leaving, I'm going to leave the team. You want to be this guy? And he goes into one of his hilarious Ben Stiller fits and leaves. And I started doing the math and I'm like, oh shit. There's still 45 minutes left of this movie. Like he's gonna have to come back. Yep. He's gonna have his own adventure. He's gonna learn his lesson. He's gonna have to come back. They're gonna have to take him back, and then there's gonna be the last fight. I gotta get out of here. I really. You start doing that movie math sometimes, and you kind of have panic attacks.
The movie math happens twice in this movie because it happens with you there, but there's another moment that we're like just about at.
Yeah.
But you mentioned Ben Stiller's gonna go off on his other adventure. Yeah. Cut to. Bow, 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 and he's just back at the coffee shop bitching to Claire Forlani, who could not give a flying fuck. And this is an obnoxious thing. Also, we're shoehorning in this love story. This completely unlikable prick is in love with this waitress who doesn't want anything to do with him. And it's like scene after scene of him trying to ask for her number and trying to get her to go out on a date. Well, they do. He's an asshole to her.
Well, I mean, Claire Forlani has the full of, like, what, maybe like 20-25 lines in total. And she got those lines. She memorized those lines within a week. Then I think she spent the rest of the time in preparation just like looking through the most recent L.L. Bean catalog and just memorizing everything in there. And the entire movie, she's just in her own brain saying,
well, if I get that, I could still get the discount. And then the 50%. I mean, the linen pants could go up. She's so checked out of the whole fucking thing.
She's checked out. You know what she wasn't doing in her free time? Practicing that American accent. She's another one that you're like, you're not fooling anybody. I wasn't fooled in Mallrats. I'm not fooled in this movie.
I'm not fooled in Meet Joe Black.
Certainly not.
For the full 3 hours? No, I was not.
And she's supposed to come from a prestigious American family in that movie. With Anthony Hopkins as your father. There's so much wrong with that fucking movie.
You know, maybe her thing with this movie, why she's not so good, is she's like, oh man, I can't wait to work with Tim Burton. And then she turned around and there was green gas. And she's like, shit. She heard a pop, turned around, and Tim Burton was gone.
She had all this art for what her makeup could look like.
Yeah.
I feel like Tim and I are really going to connect on this set because we share a lot of the same gothic dreams.
You know what they say? You work with Tim Burton once, you're always going to be in a stable of, aw, fuck.
Fucking pink cloud. It's just a pink cloud. And the cloud is reading a Sandman comic.
There's just a Sandman comic left open at the bottom where he dropped it.
So they have all this training and whatever. And Ben Stiller, he goes out on a bad date, has a fucking triple-decker tuna salad at the diner, and then comes back, doesn't even apologize to William H. Macy. William H. Macy's like, do you want to come help us on this mission? Let's go. And they fucking sneak to the house that Frankenstein built, and they go in, and it's this whole like, we're gonna sneak in, we're gonna save Captain Amazing, mm-hmm. It's gonna be fantastic. And they go in and they fucking murder him,
like, horrifically.
It really takes you out of this movie. As much as I'm already checked out, I was like, wait, what the fuck?
It's not like, you know, it needs to happen a lot earlier if we're going to do this. Like,
yeah. Right.
This is like an hour and 20 minutes in. It's like kind of the beginning of the third act. They kill him, which is kind of like, eh.
Well, because you have to switch over to this grim fucking tone you just just introduced, by the way.
So the whole gag is he's strapped to this chair and there's a machine above him. It's very Goldfinger.
And you, Frankenstein says, I'm going to kill you at midnight. Like, that's the thing. That's the time, the clock we're working on.
Correct. And so we got our timetable. We go and we're going to bust him out. Here's this Goldfinger device. No, I expect you to die. And he's like, all you got to do is pull that one lever over there. And it's another bullshit fucking Abbott and Costello witch lever bullshit fight that they all get into. And Hank Azaria pulls the wrong lever. The laser comes down and transforms him into all sorts of goblin-looking monsters before leaving him as a charred husk in this dentist chair.
So everybody remembers John Carpenter's The Thing, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Remember when they find they go to the other camp and they find like what was beginning, before he killed himself, the guy's face was splitting apart?
Oh yeah.
That's what this looks like. And it looks like his face is just fucking opening up.
For a split second, it also kind of looks like Earthworm Jim.
Yeah. It does. And it's like, I thought we were just fucking listening to Smash Mouth about to drink some fucking cool Pepsi, bro. Like, what happened?
So much Smash Mouth in this movie.
Oh, it's a ton. They did the score.
No fastball, though. No, thank you.
No. Which is ironic because the Sphinx is showing them the way.
Yeah, see?
But yeah, he's just, he's horribly disfigured. And like, there's a lot of ways to play that's funny enough. But they don't do any of it. Like,
no.
Hank Azaria just doesn't take responsibility for it. Like, yeah, you did kill him. It's like, no, I didn't. And it's like, all right.
And it's a weird, like, William H. Macy's just like, well, I couldn't have done it. I was standing over here the whole time. And it's a really, like, flat delivery. And you're just sitting here like, none of these people who are real people, because they're certainly not real superheroes. These are real people that just murdered a man.
Yeah, yeah.
Who was chained to a chair.
And I imagine William H. Macy like really was like, all right, guys, I gotta go to the cops now. This is all fun.
My wife's really gonna have my head.
I have a lot of shovels that I'm gonna look at and use for the rest of my life now. But we gotta go to the cops right now.
Well, Tim, what should I?
What? Tim's gone. Tim left. It's just this cape on the ground and a purple cloud everywhere.
It's a notebook filled with child's drawings.
Why? Does anybody know why he left this white rose on the floor?
I would love to see Tim Burton exit a movie production. Because it's got to be at least half as awesome as what we're talking about. Oh, also, so while it's Janine Garofalo, Ben Stiller, Hank Azaria, and William H. Macy, who all are all key components of butchering this man who's chained to a chair.
Yeah.
We got Paul Reubens and Kel Mitchell who are outside doing surveillance, and we're treated to a scene where Paul Reubens is farting or some such something.
He's always farting, don't worry.
Or Kel's like, oh man, who did you fart at? And he's like, oh well, I didn't fart at anybody. And a skunk comes out of the bushes and just starts humping Paul Reubens' leg. And we're watching this for no less than 3 minutes.
And he's like, just go with it. And they kind of sway in the wind. And that's good enough for the trailer. Cut it, print it, trailer.
Music cue and all.
Oh, my God. Smash Mouth to fucking skunk fucking.
Paul Reubens has got a boner, and Kel Mitchell's like, ew.
So while this is all going on in the other room, like we're not breaking into the place. They very stealthily break in and whatnot. Casanova Frankenstein is hosting the first of two parties. Or I guess, no, this is the second party he's having. He has a I got out of jail party, and then he has this I'm about to kill Captain Amazing party. And it's this like, this rogues gallery of people that he hangs out with, like all the supervillains. So we've got like some like 1930s mobster villain.
Yeah.
There's a Yakuza gang of some kind. There's like an all-girl gang.
And they all have silly names. You know,
the ones that I remember are like the frat boys or like the fratties or whatever.
The frat boys.
Yeah, which is all these like Letterman jacket wearing frat boys led by Michael Bay. In a cameo.
Nice work, okay, buddy.
And then the not Goody Mob, played by Goody Mob. So you got like CeeLo in there, the rest of the dudes. This is like pre-The Voice CeeLo, pre-Fuck You CeeLo, you know.
That went right over my head because I was like, what's that a pun on? Because I just didn't listen to that band. And I was like, oh man, is that about Wizard Magazine? No, Steve. It's about music you should be listening to.
You mean the Batman Forever soundtrack?
No,
it's Smashing Pumpkins, awesome on it.
It's like Southern rap. It's like Outkast. It's a really important movement in the music. Yeah,
that's cool. I'll be over here.
Are you going to do a song for Batman?
Did you see The Sixth Sense? It was pretty scary.
The Bone Thugs and Harmony song on that Batman soundtrack was pretty okay.
So what's annoying, and this is what I was talking about, we feel like we're coming to the end of the movie and then we're not. I mean, because this is the end of the movie. It's like, whoops, we killed him. Now fucking fight Jeffrey Rush and let me go home.
Yeah.
Instead, they all flee the mansion to go regroup.
And then they got to fucking call up Tom Waits and he's an inventor. And it goes on and on and on and on.
It just doesn't stop. And this is what I was talking about, the timeline of the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Because you realize there's still like 45 minutes left.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same. When Greg Kinnear is butchered in that chair, I'm like, well, okay, it's ending.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to get up. I'm going to go to the bathroom, stretch out a little bit. You know, I knew this was a two-hour movie. Then I'll be able to sit through the end of the movie. Hit the space bar to pause the fucking movie. There's like 30 goddamn minutes left. 30 minutes. I was like, what are you going to do for 30 minutes? And the answer is watch Tom Waits invent children's toys.
Long before that, at the 49-minute mark, I paused it. And in my head, I was like, I've got to be somewhere near an hour 30. I've got to be. There's no way it could feel this long. It can't. It just can't. I fucking looked at the thing, and I wanted to die.
Wow, you thought you were at 90 minutes. You were at 49.
49
that's,
minutes.
That's tough to come back from.
Well, this is like that stand-up set that you sit through that feels like an hour and a half because it's just like ray guns. Anyway, yeah, man, there's a lot of crazy superheroes today. Imagine like a Mr. Furious, right? Like he doesn't have superpowers, but he gets angry. Get a new career.
No, thanks, buddy. But another one I had the idea for is maybe this guy could be farting, and I don't know. Maybe he's called the, I mean, the colon's too, that's too, no, that's too easy.
I just keyed your car.
Thanks, buddy.
Weren't you Tim Burton earlier?
Cool purple smoke trick. So we have, like, because what they realize is they're like, wow, we just got hit in the face with a superhero reality, and Casanova Frankenstein has an actual weapon that he can use. We better go have Tom Waits invent us actual superhero toys so it's not just Hank Azaria throwing spoons at people.
Stuff like the Blame Thrower.
Oh, man. Is that the one that just makes people argue with each other?
Yeah, that's the whole fucking... Somebody put a Blame Thrower on this whole fucking movie. Because all it is these characters arguing at each other and not liking each other and that I'm supposed to find hilarious.
The one that dry cleans you?
The shrink ray, but it just shrinks your clothes.
It just shrinks... I believe it's just your underwear.
No,
is it your underwear or is it the whole clothes?
It's the whole clothes, because when it's used and they use the suds bubble effect, go fuck yourself.
I had no idea what was going on. Like, I had to back this movie up once because I honest to goodness fell asleep in the middle of it. And when I woke up, I realized like I'd missed a good chunk of it, and I was like, fuck, you're watching it for the show. You gotta go back.
You gotta watch all those minutes.
Find that turn.
It was all like the fucking mad monster party that I just described.
Well, it's all. I mean, like literally, this is the end of the movie. I mean, it takes a long time because we dick around with Tom Waits for a while. He becomes part of the team. Then William H. Macy needs to give a Braveheart speech about where the other guys, and you know, we're just losers. But the only way not to be losers is to just not be losers.
Is to get weapons.
We got to just dig down and fucking be superheroes, everybody.
How dare you try to fucking shovel horn in a message into this movie.
You
piece of shit screenplay.
It's
like
not.
The whole shit about like you can be anything you want. We just got to work as a team. Like there's so much crap about teamwork in this movie. It feels like shit you would watch at a corporate retreat. It's like, and then the mystery men learned that the only path to success was on the road of team workmanship.
Well, I mean, this is the kind of movie that if you were on that work retreat and they're like, we have a big prize for you tonight, guys. We're going to have ice cream and we're going to have pizza and we're going to watch Mystery Men.
I'd quit my job. Like, I consider me officially unemployed.
Because, I mean, that's what this movie was supposed to be. It's supposed to be like an in-joke for people who know about comic books, except for everybody who knows anything about comic books farted at this movie as soon as it came out.
I sure did. Because it's just like, listen, I feel like, you know, I don't super follow comics, but I feel like people who did, and this was, we were talking about this before we went on the air, but like this is 99, so we had Blade, we had Spawn. That was kind of about it, you know, and like X-Men was right around the corner. I have a feeling when this movie
Batman movies were dead.
The Batman movies were dead. The superhero Superman movies were totally dead.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was some grumblings about Fox wants to make an X-Men movie.
Yeah.
But it hadn't happened yet. But because you kind of know that, and maybe even the early stages of we're going to talk about making a new Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
And so it's like me as a comic fan, I'm just like, I don't need to sit here and watch this 2-hour rib-punching fucking thing about what I like, you know, about the world that I like. I'll just wait till a real fucking superhero movie comes out.
And you're super broad in your criticisms. It's not like you even get the details right.
No.
And that's a funny enough movie if you actually did the research to do this kind of movie.
Well, that's what the Venture Brothers is.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
The Venture Brothers is fucking amazing because they know they're not like, I don't like nerds, and this is why. Like, they're nerds themselves and get everything about that culture and everything about like what they're talking about absolutely right and know it backwards and forwards and probably don't sleep at night and just write this weird show that's very funny. And like, that's not what this is.
Yeah.
This is just fucking...
I mean, you've got one of the biggest things that sticks out, you know, and it's really just like, don't you get it, is how they're fighting over whether or not Captain Amazing is this billionaire Lance whatever.
Yeah.
And it's the old like, but he's got glasses on. And it's like, oh man, do I ever get the Superman joke that you're telling that I probably saw a couple seasons earlier on Seinfeld.
And I think Richard Pryor did that joke in 1979. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, come on. Like, it's been done, everybody.
It's been done to death.
Yeah.
I think like Tim Burton, like in the middle of this production, there was like a week they had off, and he went to like a wizard con or one of them such things.
Sure.
And they were like, "What are you working on?" And he told it to the folks at the booth, and they were like, "What are you doing that for?" Pew! Fucking left that wizard con in a cloud of mystery.
Started hitting on Helena Bonham Carter.
Got himself an umbrella copter.
He definitely built one for himself. He probably has that fucking penguin duck mobile, doesn't he?
Like that's in the garage. There's a cover over it, like a boat he never drives anymore.
Yeah.
That's where that is.
No, I think
it had a bunch of moss on it. The duck car boat thing has been winterized since 1994.
I bet you anything. In his pool, he's got the dummy of the dead penguin, and that's what he floats on, like a lazy Saturday.
Man, if I could steady a strawberry daiquiri on a fake dead Danny DeVito, let me tell you guys, that's living.
Just a cool drink.
Man, he's amazing in that movie.
He is wonderful.
Let's wrap this movie up,
we get all the weapons from Tom Waits because, you know, why not?
It's a big bunch of horse shit.
And they're like, hey, Tom Waits, want to come?
Nah, that's cool. I don't want to be in this World War II biopic. Wait, what? Maybe it's best you don't come, Tom Waits.
I'm just happy I got to work with Eddie Murphy once.
I'm Ben Stiller.
You know what I'm talking about.
You know, Barbara Stanwyck was just a treasure on the set.
You know, one time I was shooting a picture with Jarmusch and got to ride a carousel at midnight with D.W. Griffith. Honestly, that was one of the greatest moments of my career.
The history books are going to be unkind to him. In the moment, he was a sweet fella.
Bought everybody lunch.
I mean, fucking whatever. They go to his thing, and everybody has a moment where they do something because it's a fucking, you know, it's a super team movie. Kel Mitchell finally turns invisible.
Inexplicably again, turns invisible.
Now he's got superpowers. Because, you know what I mean? Like, come on.
And the way they play it at the beginning of the movie, he's like, so nobody can look at me, and then I'll turn invisible. And they're like, have you ever seen yourself do it, like in a mirror or whatever? He's like, no, if I'm looking at myself, it doesn't work either. Like, nobody can be looking at me. And they're like, okay, little kid. Like, I think he's supposed to be playing like a little kid.
Yeah, he's much younger than everybody.
And so you're like, you just pass it off as like, whatever, maybe he'll sneak by somebody, do something.
Yeah.
Because the whole gag is like, he's ignored by his whole family, yeah. So he's the invisible boy. And you think like, oh, okay, that's kind of sad. Like, he's ignored, so he thinks he's invisible. No. He just straight up turns invisible. And somehow also when he does, his clothes all fall off.
No, he took his clothes off to be invisible.
Like, oh, so it wasn't like a t-shirt floating around?
No, I see what's going on. Like a real Memoirs of the Invisible Man situation.
Oh, right.
Speaking of John Carpenter.
And, you know, Janine Garofalo, apparently Eddie Izzard killed her father. I used my American gun to kill your father, sweetheart.
I also love disco music, baby.
Hey, Pros, want to use one of your three lines?
You only get three, so be careful.
I'm going to take the rest of them. Yummy, 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 yummy.
I'm going to take your lines and eat them up.
Yummy, yummy,
yummy. That's great.
I mean,
they fucking kill Jeffrey Rush. Who gives a shit?
They kill everybody. I mean, Claire Forlani gets kidnapped, and it's like, why? What?
That is the bit. I mean, I was talking about it being shoehorned before. It's so shoehorned now because at no point ever is anyone like, you know what? We better keep the Mystery Men under surveillance. That never happens. There's no way Jeffrey Rush knows that they went out on a date.
Well, he says
a date. Just one date.
Why don't you take fucking William H. Macy's wife? Like, that's going to be, there you go.
Yep, that's a stake.
Mama Blue Raja? Take her. Get her out of here.
You know what? Kill her.
Yeah.
For that, the marijuana line. Kill her. Throw her in that fucking pit. You yourself will later fall down, Jeffrey Rush.
Yeah, he gets turned into a Cthulhu also.
It's just some horseshit where, like, the machine that killed Greg Kinnear is overloading, and there's a big... Oh, because he's gonna use the same device on all of Champion City is what's going to happen. Isn't that great, everybody?
So everybody's going to be fucking dead.
Yeah, which is...
Fuck it, everybody's dead. So me stupid. Too, by the way.
Yeah, even Casanova Frankenstein will be dead.
At some point, Lena Olin does her own cloud of gas and gets out of this movie. You do not... There's no end to this character. She's his number two. She's at the party. She looks a little uncomfortable. And then,
I think her and Burton went on vacation together. You want to go to my creepy house in Puerto Rico?
Hey, Lena, you're a weird girl. Want to hang out?
I have a small shack in Transylvania. Really
That's
nice.
Good
this
enough
time.
For me.
You got see, no bedrooms.
You want to see the original cut of Murnau's Nosferatu?
It's 6 hours long.
Most of it is stuff I redid myself
with puppets.
And my butler will play the piano.
Spoiler alert, I also play my own butler with a clever wig on. Yeah, well, it's better than being in Mystery Men.
Yeah, go ahead.
Guess I'll go on this weird vacation with you, Tim Burton.
Yeah, the sink I can wash myself in, Tim.
Tim Burton's destination vacation.
Shacks across the globe.
So everybody's fucking dead, and then the Mystery Men walk outside. There's a bunch of press there for no reason.
And they're like, oh my God, it's the Mystery Man. It's like, oh, and everyone gets validated. William H. Macy's wife, who said she was going to leave him because he's been doing this for 12 years.
Lest we forget, more than a decade.
And she's like, you know what, dude, this is too much. You know, like, you're going to get killed or I don't care, you know. And, you know, I'm going to leave you. And then, like, she's like literally packing up and one of their kids turns on the TV and there he is. He just saved the city from who cares.
She's just like, my hero. And I was like, really? What about that divorce that you promised him?
Yeah, you've been fucking working at that secretarial school for like what? Yeah. Over a decade.
He refuses to go back to the fucking coal mine because he's outside shoveling at night.
And, you know, this movie doesn't have the scrote, even though we're 9 years away from a black president, to have them kiss. That's not going to happen.
No, that's not happening.
Because she's like, you know, Ben Stiller gets his kiss with Claire Forlani. She's not there like, oh, my God, my hero, and kisses him. That's not.
Like, Claire Forlani's kissing Ben Stiller, and in her head, she's like, okay, loaf of bread. Need some more mustard, thing of eggs.
Well, I mean, French's is going to cost me less. But Grey Poupon, I mean, they overprice it.
I should spring for it, though. You know, I'm doing this Mystery Men movie. I can buy some more expensive mustard.
I might even get that ground up stuff.
I mean, I've got 20 pages left in 100 Years of Solitude. I'm probably going to finish it tonight. Can I go to Barnes & Noble and get a new book? I don't know.
Help.
Oh, here's his tongue. Oh, that's uncomfortable.
How long does it take papaya to go old?
And then it's just, you know, take us home, Smash Mouth. The fucking All-Star song kicks up again.
That was in the video.
I remember the video.
It was a tie-in, man.
Yeah. And that's it. There's no, like, you know, smart on this movie to not have a goddamn you're not going to believe this sequel set up. You know, there's no Jeffrey Rush, Frank Langella hand coming out of something.
Nope.
You know, there's none of that. It's just like, you know what? This is probably going to be the only Mystery Men movie. And that's it. There's an odd thing in the credits where it says Dockers khakis, the official khakis of Champion City.
Because this movie was taking people's money, man, left and right. Like, it's like, all right, this movie's not going to make any money in the theaters because Tim Burton just left. And we have to say somebody named Kinka Usher directed it.
And that's... The first half of that contract, by the way, he keeps.
Oh, yeah,
whether or not he stays or not, he gets that first half.
It's a pay-for-play contract, my friend.
I mean, poor Kinka Usher, like, could have had a career ahead of him. Instead, he's now credited as the guy who directed Mystery Men. That's no good for anybody.
I mean, he could have directed it, or he might have directed some of it. I mean, I don't know.
I just don't buy that this nobody was assigned to direct this big-budget movie with tons of stars for Universal Pictures. I just don't buy it.
It might be one of Hollywood's greatest mysteries, honestly. And if there was anyone more credible than Tom Waits talking, I'd feel great about it. And I love Tom Waits.
You know, it was amazing when I was filming my major role in Beverly Hills Cop 2. I turned to, well, it was one of the Lumiere brothers. I don't remember which one specifically. But, the point is the conversation centered around gambling and women.
Yeah, I mean, he's not exactly a credible source because he's a chameleon stage man performer.
Yeah.
And he just likes to have fun with people, and maybe he's just putting something over on somebody in his own autobiography.
But
I
that's
guess.
What's amazing about it, though. It's not like he's talking about some big secret about one of his records.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, he's known as an actor mostly for the Jarmusch stuff, yeah. And it's no bit about a Jarmusch movie. It's about this piece of shit 1999 garbage superhero movie that he has no reason to make this up about.
You know what? Say what you want about Roberto Benigni. He had a great scene with Lillian Gish in that Down by Law. Just a standout performance.
Lillian Gish. I mean, who knows? It's too bad. You know why it's never going to get solved? Because Robert Stack's dead.
He's the one person that would get to the bottom of this. A Hollywood unsolved mystery.
Tonight was Mystery Men directed by Tim Burton. I won't know because I can't watch it. It's 2 fucking hours long.
On okay. Celebrity Unsolved Mysteries.
I kind of love it if like Kenneth Anger's like follow-up to Hollywood Babylon was just a book about Mystery Men.
Oh, there's lots of secrets, man.
Hollywood Babylon 4, the special Mystery Men only edition.
It's 400 pages long.
It's somehow 400 pages. There's a bunch of suspect photos of multicolored clouds.
Is this Tim Burton?
It's all sketches.
Notice this green cloud. Beneath it, a collection of Edgar Allan Poe stories.
The casting director was supposed to hire Keenan Thompson, but accidentally hired Kel Mitchell, and they didn't have the guts to say, "Oh shit, you wanted? I didn't know. I don't watch that show."
Their instructions were just hire the funny one from Keenan and Kel.
I didn't know. That's just my opinion.
They had the better lines. Throughout that show.
I think it goes without saying that no one's directed or recommending this movie.
No one directed it
either. Funny enough, Andrew's mouth. But no, no one here is recommending it.
Just call me Mr. Nobody.
Mystery Men directed by the Elephant Man.
Still, I was a pain to work with.
Bunch of prima donnas.
Now, I would say we always try to do, if there's like a solid three-way round the horn non-recommendation, we try to put people out with something. I would say a comic book movie that came out around this same time that's a total recommend for me, Blade 2.
Oh, yeah.
I think Blade 2 is a solid sequel. It's a good comic book movie.
And I'm going to say this because I wasn't on the Batman Forever episode, so I didn't get to say what my breakdown of the Batman movies was. But actually, number one with a bullet would be Batman Returns is my favorite Batman movie today.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just a phenomenal movie top to bottom.
And Scott Pilgrim, you know, I mean, it's kind of got its cult of its own. You know, I'm not fucking turning any heads, but I think it's the only time that people have got, like, really just dove into superhero culture, comic book culture, had a lot of fun with it, and made it funny.
Oh, my God, you guys. That is the first week of our summer blockbuster extravaganza 2014. Again, it was Mystery Men, possibly directed by Tim Burton. If you want to get a hold of us, check out the website, whmpodcast.com. There you can find an episodes page, which will lead you to the back catalog of episodes. For all you new listeners out there, episodes 100 and back can be found on there. Be sure to direct download those or stream them right from the website. Follow us on Facebook. We reached our 2,000th like recently. That was very cool. Keep it up. Keep telling your friends. Make sure if you're not a member of the Facebook page, like the page. We always put a bunch of fun stuff up on there, continuing the WHM conversation off the air. Also follow us on Twitter. We are at WHM Podcast. Right into the mailbag, weallhatemovies@gmail.com. Rate and review the show wherever you shall subscribe to it. Don't forget to also pick up those commentaries we talked about, Chudmentary and the new Star Trek Nemesis commentary, Trekmentary Nemesis, available now on iTunes and other fine downloading sources.
I fight my clone.
I fight my clone. It's another bald man with a fake nose. Good gravy, Star Trek Nemesis.
That's silly.
Blame It on Outer Space, our sister show. Check them out. Bi-weekly conspiracy theories with a comedic twist. Blame It on Outer Space.com, @BlameSpacePod on Twitter, Facebook.com/ Blame It on Outer Space. They're also on iTunes and the Stitcher Radio app. Rate and review those guys as well. More exposure for the show, more exposure for the WHM family. We would greatly appreciate it. All right. The Summer Blockbuster Extravaganza continues in week two. Hint for next week's episode. Chris Cabin.
Christopher Lambert.
Ooh. We haven't had him in quite a while.
Have we ever done him?
Wasn't he in, what was that alien movie that takes place in Houston, Texas?
I Come in Peace? No.
He's not in that movie?
That's Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, it's Dolph Lundgren. Well, and then the other guy's, I guess, just someone else who kind of looks
Benton,
like
Christopher. Yeah, he looks exactly
oh,
like
Oh, yeah, yes. The alien, yes.
The other movie. Alien yeah. looks like Christopher Lambert. All right. But, so I guess welcome to the show next week, Christopher Lambert, everybody. So Christopher Lambert, it's pretty vague and whatnot, but just remember, summer blockbuster, so we're doing big movies next
like
week.
Like Mystery Men.
Take that, Universal Pictures and ourselves. Until next week, where we figure out which Christopher Lambert movie we're talking about, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Chris Cabin.
Steven Tata.
Take it easy. Hello, I'm Andrew Jupin. Let's just do that again.
You go first.
This is episode 160.